This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way, and there's a lot of moving parts. This hour, we're going to be joined by Brett Baer. Fresh off my appearance on Special Report, he's still, according to reports, still on an all-time high just about me being there. And David Sharf is here. He's a former Trump attorney, trial lawyer, and litigator at the Morris Cohen Group. There's a lot of things going on, including, by the way, Nassau County, my county, is being sued because, get this, they are having their cops cooperate with ICE. And the ACLU says that is not good. That's how twisted all this is. Rig three.
Number three.
Republicans are really beginning to learn how bad the big ugly bill is for them. Republican senators are airing deep concerns behind closed doors, but they're not being honest at home to their constituents.
No, they're deep concerned, but nothing that would please you, Chuck Schumer, who's a Democrat, desperately trying to get some traction. The big beautiful bill careening its way through the Senate. Thune, it says we're going to get this thing done and hand it over to the House. How does the House feel about it? They're weighing in. I'll bring you their point of views.
Number two.
We have won because New Yorkers have stood up for a city they can afford. We'll use their power to reject Donald Trump's fascism, to stop mass ICE agents from deporting our neighbors.
Yeah, going to stop ICE from deporting illegal criminals. Stunning upset in New York City during the primary mayoral race as Andrew Cuomo concedes to radical socialist Zohran Mamdani, I should say anti-Semite too, his disdain for Israel, Jews, and the wealthy and fueled his victory, sadly. That's the type of city I'm in. And Bernie Sanders and AOC couldn't be happier. It's good news for Curtis Sliwa and Eric Adams. I'll explain.
Number one.
And the thing that hurts me is it's really demeaning to the pilots and the people that put that whole thing together, the generals. That was a perfect operation.
President of the United States talking about the strike in Iran under scrutiny as deep state minimizes the strike effectiveness. But there's huge pushback now from, get this, the Israelis on the ground who have confirmed the devastation and the Iranians. The Iranians. And the White House is beside themselves. Basically, put together a huge operation. And if you want to talk about what happens next, let's debate it. If you want to talk about the decision to go in, let's debate it. But now you're saying, okay, the biggest non-nuclear bombs in the world, dropped 12 of them. Tomahawks destroyed one above-ground facility, which is where they convert the enriched uranium to a gas, to an orb that goes on top of a missile. That's destroyed. And now all of a sudden, they're, wait a second. I don't really think much was done. Maybe sets them back 2 or 3 months. Brett Baer, we talked about this last night on Special Report. That was one of the topics for the panel. And now there's huge pushback today. Your thoughts?
Yeah. Hey, Brian, I think we handled it right, you know, cautiously looking at the leaked intel from that said low confidence. I mean, if you looked at what was leaked, you know, essentially it said that they can't make a determination is what the intel said. But the Israelis and the Iranians now are putting out statements saying they believe that that it's going to be many years. It's Iran's ability to develop nuclear weapons set back by many years. And they say, I mean, when you have the Iranian foreign ministry spokesperson saying its nuclear installations badly damaged by American strikes. I mean, what's on the upside for them, you know, other than to tell the truth, one, and to try to get in a position on this ceasefire to be negotiating kind of further. So I don't know. I think the stories were overheated and the headlines were you know, big and bold, but it didn't match what the intel was saying.
So we should be clear. It's one of 17 intel agencies in America that writes, this is from the Pentagon. And they said of low confidence, but this is what we think. It's going to be put back 2 to 3 months. Well, the Israeli Atomic Energy Commission put out another statement just now. The devastating U.S. strike on Fordo destroyed the site's critical infrastructure and rendered the enrichment facility inoperable. We assess that the American strikes on Iran's nuclear facilities, combined with the Israeli strikes on other elements of Iran's military nuclear program, has set back Iran's ability to develop nuclear weapons for many years. This achievement can continue indefinitely if Iran does not get access to nuclear material. And then we factor in the fact that the AP said, as you mentioned, that Iran says there's significant damage to our nuclear facility. Here's their quote through translation. Badly damaged. Our nuclear program is badly damaged. And then you factor in that the president of Iran wants to have talks. To me, Brett, the story is this. The decision to go in. The aftermath, absolutely, that should be a decision. That should be a discussion. The decision to go in, what happens next, and what does Iran do next? But instead, they have to diminish something President Trump did as if it's back to the Russia hoax, back to the impeachment scandal, back to the laptop being real. Why? It's like they go out of their way, almost rooting against the success of a strike that other presidents refused to take that he did take.
I agree with you. And it's the actual action of the move that has changed the dynamic. And I think we're going to get a better assessment over time about really what the Iran nuclear facilities and their capabilities are. But the fact that the Iranians want to get to the table in this ceasefire suggests to you all that you need to know, that changed the entire dynamic of what was happening on the ground.
I know. I want you to hear, because you played last night, Martha's great interview with the IAEA head. Marco Rubio spoke this morning, and he said this about the leak itself, cut five.
So I can also tell you that intelligence leaks are one of the most frustrating things anywhere, not just because you got somebody who has access to this putting stuff out there, but because it's so often mischaracterized. An intelligence report, for anyone who's ever seen it, sometimes is an assessment. Some analysts will make an assessment. Or analysts will make an assessment. And in these leaks, what you typically have is someone who read it and then leaks it to the media, giving it the spin and the angle they want it to have because they've got some purpose. Embarrass the administration. They were against the action, whatever it may be.
So what Britt Hume put out this morning, who I know you are a fan of, is notice who did the story. And it's this Natasha Bertrand. And she was at the forefront of the Russia investigation. She was at the forefront of the dossier revelation. She was at the forefront and the recipient of 51 intel agents said that the laptop was not real. Now, Britt Hume, hardly a conspiracy theorist or a fringe political analyst, I would say is as mainstream as he gets. He noticed that. Do you think that's something we all should know?
Well, I definitely should notice it, and it's a pattern, and Britt is usually good at cutting through the noise, and I mean, it's something worth noting, and if you look at all of those, you know, iterations of stories, they all dealt with, it seemed, some deep kind of intel sources trying to influence things one way or another.
Of course, we'll continue to talk about this, and then we'll talk about what they said at NATO, and they've all agreed to go to 5% of their GDP in terms of defense spending. Between the invasion of Ukraine by Russia and the president urging more expenditures, I think the message really got through in 2025, Brett, that was laughed at in 2017.
Yeah, exactly. And look, it's only because of President Trump that NATO leaders are doing this. I mean, there's no other impetus that forced this issue other than President Trump in the first term and then pushing it the second term. And the fact that those countries get up to five, whether it's 3.5 and 1.5 or however they break it down, but increasing that much of their GDP is really, really significant. We've obviously been putting into NATO and funding it for years and years.
Yeah, I just hope, me personally, that the president finds a way to get some funding to Ukraine. I mean, they earned it. This isn't the South Vietnamese have to get their backbone. This is a country fighting gallantly for 3 years on a war they didn't ask for. And I just think that if Zelensky hangs in Kyiv, that it'll be worse than even Afghanistan. I think the Western world understands what's at stake. He did show up to Zelensky in a suit this time. I think he got the president's message. The president didn't like the uniform.
Yeah. And he's meeting with President Trump on the sidelines of NATO. And maybe this dynamic is different. And you're right, it changes. But, you know, you think about the nuclear efforts and you look back and Ukraine giving up its nuclear program, you know, would they be in the same spot today if they had it?
Would Gaddafi be alive? Probably.
Exactly.
He would be alive.
Exactly.
And that's what the Ayatollah is looking at this and saying, wait a second. You know, we might look at Iraq and say maybe we shouldn't have gone in, but he looks at Saddam Hussein and and sees him hanging. And then he looks at Gaddafi and he goes, well, there was no plan after the invisible bombing campaign. True. But you know what the Ayatollah probably looks at is Gaddafi's fate, the most horrific fate you can imagine for a leader. And I think that's what he's looking at right now. And those are the cards he's looking at. Real quick on the New York primary, Zohran Mamdani wins, a radical socialist Muslim who never really accomplished anything in his life, never really had a real job, but promises free buses, free trains, free supermarkets, city-run supermarkets. BDS supports the BDS movement and not a fan of the Jewish religion. Cut 28.
We have won because New Yorkers have stood up for a city they can afford. A city where they can do more than just struggle. And it's where the mayor will use their power to reject Donald Trump's fascism, to stop mass ICE agents from deporting our neighbors.
I should bring up that he wants to defund the police, too, and get social workers out there, which will be a big relief because I'm so tired of law and order. So this opens up. The Democratic primary goes to Mamdani. Cuomo, who is, you know, defamed and disgraced anyway, is gone, it seems. And that might clear the way for Curtis Lewer and Eric Adams. This is a national story, isn't it?
100%. I mean, it shows dissatisfaction, first of all. It's you know, it's a reaction to not feeling great, but it also is a Democratic Party that is trying to find a powerful voice. And right now, the powerful voices are coming from the far left. And the Bernie Sanders and AOC applauding this is really quite something. And, you know, I don't know if it's a model. We'll see what happens in the general election. I think things bode well for Eric Adams to make a comeback, but we'll see. You know, maybe Curtis Lewa figures it out.
So, Brett, I can't guarantee you this, but we are putting the rights to our Eric Adams interview out in the open market. And if you want to make a bid on that, get to that early and use my name.
Okay, I'll try to get in there with your name.
Okay, hey, by the way, is it true you have Lawrence Jones on the panel tonight?
We do, I believe.
Right.
I haven't got the list of the panel, but I think I'll be in New York. I mean, it won't be as good as last night's panel.
That's what I was going to say. Right. I mean, and I told Lawrence that, and he's not looking to exceed me. By the way, Brett's got a new book coming out in October. It's called To Rescue the American Spirit, Teddy Roosevelt and the Birth of a Superpower. You were out at Sagamore Hill yesterday, the last home of Teddy Roosevelt. Was that the first time you were there?
First time I was there, I had researchers, went up there and I saw pictures of it and everything, but I had not been in it. And it is like he left yesterday. It's really quite something. If you ever have a chance to get up there, it's awesome, as you well know.
His son's buried in the property. He's buried in the property of a short way away. But here's the crazy thing. That, to me, I'm always surprised because that was a school trip for every elementary school on Long Island. You know how you have your own town and you have your own?
Yeah.
So that was there every day. And how crazy is this? Across the way from Sagamore Hill is one of the homes that George Washington stayed in when he came back to Long Island to thank his spies before he became president.
Amazing. The history just in that area is really quite
something. In Oyster Bay, that's one of the spies was right there.
Hey, let me mention one more thing.
Yep.
I am once again playing in the American Century Championship in Lake Tahoe.
When?
And it's in a couple weeks. And I think I'm going to be traveling, so I won't be on the radio show. So I wanted to mention that. People should tune in because it's going to be a good year with all the celebs playing against each other. As you know, it's a pretty big thing.
Yeah.
I need to get in the top page of the leaderboard.
A couple of things. Who is it? Do you know who's in your foursome?
No, you don't know until you get there.
Okay.
But you know, it's the same people always are at the top of the list. Steph Curry and
Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers is up there sometimes. There's a bunch of big names, but usually the same people go to the top of the list. Jack Wagner, believe it or not, soap opera star. He's always up there too. And anyway, I would like to get to the top page of the leaderboard at least, so that NBC has to put me on the leaderboard.
How well are you playing?
I'm playing okay. I've been working a little bit, so my game has suffered slightly, but I'm ready. Maybe I'll call you from out there.
You know, it'll be great. Brett, you're going to be so relaxed because you have been working so much. You're not going to have the pressure on yourself. I predict great things.
Right. Good. American Century. There you go.
You got it. Brett Baer, thanks so much. Back in a moment.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. Fox News Audio presents Unsolved with James Patterson. Every crime tells a story, but some stories are left unfinished.
Somebody knows.
Real cases, real people. Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The Iranian nuclear program has been set back significantly. It is clear that there is one Iran before June 13, nuclear Iran, and one now. And it's night and day. It's a new reality now. Iran has far less capabilities than it had in the past.
So that is the head of the IAEA on with Martha yesterday. Of course it's damaged. And to the degree it's damaged, there are centrifuges, a couple of, that wasn't the issue. But it became the issue yesterday because so many outlets, so many news outlets say, we got to marginalize President Trump. Democrats got to say he didn't ask for permission. So that they tried to impeach him. Al Green tried to impeach him yesterday. And then the Democrats got to, like, Mark Kelly, the biggest disappointment in Congress, because he's an established Air Force pilot, astronaut. I thought he's going to have a hard time being very political, you know, because no-nonsense military guy. Boy, was I mistaken. So that becomes a narrative. And then the DIA puts out a report that says not much damage is done, which they couldn't possibly know. But they had to get it out. So that becomes the story. But it really isn't the story. The story is the president's decision to do it. The story is where we go from here. The story is how close is Israel to getting some security in their country. And the other subplot is Hamas. Steve Witkoff is starting conversations with Hamas again. Are we close to getting those 23 hostages out and some type of resolve in Gaza? Because notice, Hamas didn't rock it. Hezbollah didn't rock it. The Houthis didn't rock it. The militias in Iraq didn't rock it. They've isolated the bully of the Middle East. So that is the story, whether you like it or not. And we'll talk about the big, beautiful bill, our economy, the trade deals and things of that nature. But coming up next, some of the legal harangues the president's going through with David Scharf, his former attorney. Don't move.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Brian Kilmeade Show, we're moving ahead. It's been a pretty crazy day. We're watching the president of NATO with the time change. Prime time is morning. And we'll watch. I was watching him overnight. You know, I get up at 3 o'clock and I'm able to listen to what's going on in real time at The Hague in the Netherlands. And then you see the president of the United States with the press conference, able to fire back in a general setting about some of the erroneous reporting that says we only dropped 12 bunker busters, the most powerful non-nuclear bombs in the history of the world, but not much damage is done. The farce of that, and then the pushback, and then we see that our NATO allies seem very much in support, unlike 8 years ago, 7.5 years ago, when they were kind of laughing at the president as if he doesn't know what's going on. David Scharf is our guest, former Trump attorney, trial lawyer and litigator at Morris Cohen, but right here in New York City. And David, one of the big stories, it's what happened in the primary yesterday. It's ranked choice voting, but there's just no doubt who won.
Oh, there's no doubt that the far left of the party is now controlling at least the primaries. And you know, people who didn't realize that this was coming down the pike, it was math. And you can algorithm out that if the left of the party was going to get together, and that is the most activist part in any primary, was going to get together, and there was almost no way that Andrew Cuomo could win. And in some ways, that was the smarts of what Mayor Adams did. He pulled himself out of that situation, let the fray move on, and now he's positioned to go one-on-one or one-on-three, depending on what Andrew Cuomo decides to do.
So what I think people should know with this guy, Zohram Mamdani, and the reason why it's a national story is because I thought as a country we moved past these radical leftists. If you look at Rahm Emanuel, guys like Harold Ford, you see James Carville, they're saying, what are we doing with the pronouns? What are we doing with this intolerance? What are we doing with men and women sports? Why aren't we cracking down on the border? You thought Democrats were reconfiguring. But then you watch what happened yesterday. You have this social media star who's Muslim, unaccomplished, no real job, assemblyman. Talk about free buses for the poor, free child care for the poor, new apartments, raise the minimum wage. He wants to raise the taxes on rich people. He is for BDS, defunding Israel everywhere we can. This guy is anti-Semitic. He's justifying terms like globalize the infantata. So you almost thought to yourself, how's this guy getting any support, let alone this much support? What does it tell you?
Well, it tells you, I think, that what we always know is in the primaries, you only have the far motivated that come out and vote. There are a million registered independents in New York that didn't have anywhere to vote yesterday. Most of the Republicans didn't really have an election to come out and vote for. As a Jew, as a leader of a New York City law firm that's been around for a long time, I am still optimistic that New York hasn't gone to Crazyville, and that the voice of the far left is not the only voice, and that New York's best days are ahead of us.
He also wants to defund the police. He wants to get social work, take another $1 billion out of the police force. This is what this guy stands for, and it's so embarrassing. Cut 30.
And our police force should not be assisting ICE.
Defund the NYPD and refund all of these different social services.
I will create a network of city-owned grocery stores. It's like a public option for produce.
How many more New Yorkers? How many more New Yorkers will you detain? How many more New Yorkers will you detain? Do you believe in the First Amendment? Do you believe in the First Amendment, Tom Homan?
So that part was Tom Homan went to Albany, and this guy shows up and starts screaming and had to be restrained. That's who New York said should represent Democrats.
Well, I think what that means is the Democratic Party has left most people who will be center left in that party. I think it means that the Democratic Party is not the Democratic Party of a half a generation ago, let alone a generation ago. I think Democrats need to wake up and recognize that in certain places, right, in limited pockets, I'd like to think in this country, is not the Democrat Party of what it used to be, and that they need to find a new home for themselves. And the GOP has been that party that is out there and is waiting for people to come in, and rational common sense hopefully prevails, Brian.
I want you to hear what Eric Adams just told us today on Fox and Friends about Mamdani and why he's confident.
He's a snake oil salesman. Mm-hmm. He will say and do anything to get elected. Think about this for a moment. He wants to raise 1%. He wants to raise tax on 1% of New York's high-income earners. As a mayor, you don't have the authority to do that. You know who has the authority to do that? An assemblyman, which he is. He wants to do free buses. He could have done it at assemblyman. He doesn't understand the power of government.
He doesn't understand the office, what he can do, and maybe people, before they vote, should find out what a mayor can do.
Oh, absolutely. It's embedded in the New York City Charter in terms of the separation of powers and how things can operate. If people want common sense governance, they know that they have a mayor who could do that. a mayor who can push that agenda forward. You know, Curtis Sliwa is offering that to the public in New York City. And you know, Mr. Mamdani is offering pie in the sky and not a reality show. And hopefully he'll get a reality check come November.
So where does people like Bloomberg and all the big supporters that were with Cuomo, that were maybe didn't love Cuomo but thought he was the best chance of normalcy in New York, are they going to bring their money to Adams?
You know what? I think they're going to go through a period of time now when they've just got to retrench and figure out what they want to do. I believe some of them don't find Mayor Adams to be palatable. I know they're not going to find Curtis Sliwa to be palatable. But again, as I shared with many people this morning who have been reaching out to me, we've got to hope that common sense intellect prevails over radical ideology, because what you heard and what everyone listened to on that clip, that's not democracy in action. That's the worst of socialism at work.
I want you to hear with Arthur Idella, famed attorney, a New Yorker. He's got his own show, too. Used to be here for a while. Here's what he said. Who should really be happy? Cut 31.
There's no one happier after Mamdani and his family than Eric Adams tonight, because everyone over 50 years old who remembers Times Square in the 1970s and the 1980s, when you couldn't walk through, it was all pornography and crack and muggings and rapes and robberies. Everyone who remembers that is going to vote for Eric Adams. The New York Times, who didn't make an endorsement, did say, please don't vote for Mamdani, as did the Daily News, as did the New York Post. So anybody who knows how bad New York can get all came out against Mamdani, because a 33-year-old with zero experience running anything except a little office with five employees not be running the city of New York.
And I guess you agree with that, David.
Oh, absolutely. And the mayor planned for this. By pulling himself out of the primary, he set himself up to be poised.
So right now, Nassau County is being sued on Long Island by the ACLU, because they're cooperating with ICE. This is the most horrific thing I've seen. Cops like the LAPD letting ICE twist for 45 minutes, maybe 55 minutes in L.A. 3 weeks ago. And that's why the National Guard brought in. And then you have this woman, Cynthia Gonzalez, out in California, vice mayor of a small town there, calling on the gangs to rise up, literally the street gangs to rise up against ICE. Listen to this, this despicable character. Cut 39.
You guys are all about territory, and this is 18th Street, and this is Florence, and you guys tag everything up, claiming hood. And now that your hood's being invaded by the biggest gang there is, there ain't a peep out of you. It's everyone else who's not about the gang life that's out there protesting and speaking up. We're out there, like, fighting our turf, protecting our turf, protecting our people. And, like, where you at?
I mean, what should happen to her?
Large cities are under attack, and they're under attack from the political establishment on the left, and that is scary. And that's why the elections are important. That's why people who interfere with government action need to understand that they're going to be arrested, not because it's clickbait for them to become more popular.
Right.
I think that's an unfortunate inevitability in the world, where when you see everything that's going on the street, everyone's just hanging up their phone. They're holding up their phone. They're looking to provide that next moment. And that's a sad referendum on where we are as a society. But people have to recognize that if they don't come out and have their voices be heard, New York City and other large cities around this country are not going to look like anything we've ever seen before.
What about Nassau County? I mean, technically, they're in a sanctuary state. So what are they going to do? They're doing the right thing for the country. But are they pushing back against the law in telling the cops to cooperate with ICE?
Well, the law is you have to cooperate with the laws of the country. You know, there's the supremacy clause. There are the powers of the state. There's the power of local government. And I think what you're seeing in Nassau County is common sense governments and governance.
But are they legally in jeopardy?
Well, no. Just because the ACLU brings a lawsuit to stop something from happening doesn't mean they're in legal jeopardy. It means that some court is going to be making a decision on the issue, and there is appellate review for that. And even though we all know that the trial court levels have become very polarized and very politicized, The appellate courts, the Supreme Courts, they're actually a little different. They're a little more thoughtful, and they're about policy, and they're about enforcing the rule of the law of the land. So I think you're going to see common sense decisions coming out of a court, but it may not be the trial court.
So, David, people on the left are pointing out, and I watched Senator Durbin last week say, you guys want to point out that Joe Biden's slipping. Joe, we think Donald Trump is slipping mentally, intellectually. You've known him since for how long?
I've known him for over 24 years.
Is the guy that we saw at NATO today, the one that we saw speak yesterday, leave on Marine One, the one that we've seen win re-election, is he slipping?
Oh, he's not slipping. He's more resolute and stronger than he's ever been. He's having an opportunity to be the incredible patriot that I've always known him to be. He led as commander-in-chief this past weekend and the period of time leading up to that with great clarity, with great conviction, and with thought and policy in terms of how he thought about intelligence information, what success looked like, and was able to call upon the execution. And taking his victory tour today, as he should, when after this tremendous show of force, peace through strength. That is something that has been on the president's mind since before we were attacked on September 11th. That's when I started to get to know the president. And the president believes in that, and he's been showing great conviction, thought, and intellect in the execution of that.
How much do you think it means to him? Almost a year ago, 13 months ago, the president was convicted in New York on a sham trial that even Andrew Cuomo said nobody else would have been tried like this except for President Trump. And then he's got the civil trial that cost him $450 million. First off, on that conviction, which has basically been dismissed, how important do you think it is for him to get that overturned?
Well, I think one of the things, we haven't seen a decision come out of the appellate court as to the propriety of that entire case. That decision has been pending since argument for quite some time. I think that should tell everyone something about that, that there certainly isn't complete clarity among the five justices who heard that case on appeal, that everything that was found in that decision is something that is sustainable.
Well, you know,
as a
that was a joke.
Law.
David, you had to think that was a joke last year.
Well, you know, there were so many errors. And I appear in front of that trial judge in many different matters. He's got his way about him. He is one of the most overturned judges. And like I've said, the judiciary has become weaponized politically. And we see that.
So the civil trial that cost him $450 million that they said, I dare you to get a bond, and he got the bond. Letitia James imaged herself at Trump Tower auctioning it off. Didn't happen. But what about that as that went up the court system?
Well, I think as it continues to go up the court system, I believe it's going to get thrown out for all the reasons.
Because there were no damages.
Forget about
that. The banks didn't even sue.
There was no fraud. There was no misrepresentation. When somebody provides an appraisal, that is an opinion of value. You cannot be convicted or charged with fraud, which is a knowing and intentional statement, and say that an opinion is a knowing and intentional statement.
It worries me. It's your business, but it worries me that things could be trumped up against someone that powerful and you're almost powerless to stop it. The only thing that got him, that saved him, was winning the presidency.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. We very oftentimes in our practice of law are forced to tell our clients that outcomes to the end, far too long to get to justice. Very often you don't get justice, and it costs a lot of money. So it's got to be somebody like President Trump who has the fortitude, the conviction, and the wherewithal in order to be able to see it through.
All right. Great to see you, David Sharf. I'll have you back again. Sadly, Donald Trump is trying to be stopped by the courts on almost all of his executive orders and his policies, so we'll need your expertise, David. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Great to be here, Brian. Thank you.
Back with some calls, and to finish up this hour, you're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. We're also going to bring you the latest from NATO as the president wraps up his first appearance in his second term over there.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Socialism.
This is Zoran Mamdani. Here's what he normally sounds like.
We gather tonight in the wealthiest city, in the wealthiest country,
in the history of the world.
But in an interview in South Africa, he sounded a little different.
I actually created a playlist for Mira, who also happens to be my mother. You know, nepotism and hard work goes a long way.
And in an interview with the Turkish-American podcast, Mamdani sounded different again.
I'll be honest with you, Brother Mansoum, is that at this point, not many people are thinking about it.
And here is Zoran during his rapper days.
You know, it would have been here earlier, but worldwide tour is a worldwide tour is a worldwide tour.
Yeah.
You can't
celebrity
just,
things.
You can't just stop it. You know.
We are back, everybody. Brian Kilmeade, Joe. Will Wheaton for the President of the United States is going to be speaking again. This is his third or fourth press conference since he's been there. Some were just off the top. Some were just, something that he was just, okay, open up, you know, anybody have any questions? The other one, he was sitting there in the morning, and he was sitting there with the General Secretary, Marco Rubio, Pete Hegseth, and they just opened up, and all the questions just were about the bombing and also the 5%. So, and Katie Pavlich was there, and he gave Katie two or three questions. But it's just amazing to me the point of view on these questions on the historic decision that George Bush, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, Bush, Trump the first time didn't take to just bomb out their nuclear sites. The question was, well, how much damage do you really do? I mean, that's as bad as 51 intel agents. That's as bad as, well, you wouldn't have won the election if Vladimir Putin didn't help you. So, again, they're doing it, but the problem for them and for most media outlets is no one's listening to them. They really aren't. And it's not so much you have to agree with the president, but just report accurately. If you want to debate elements of what the president did, what happens next, and is there a clear plan going forward, that's great comment. If you want to talk about did he have the power and the presidency to do it, that's a good debate. Guess what? He didn't have to incite the War Powers Act for a single strike. You know who didn't? George H.W. Bush for 41. 41, that is. Bill Clinton when he went 4 days of bombings in Iraq. This guy named Barack Obama, who bombed Libya, never got permission for doing that. So just an idea. The double and triple standard. And I just think we're forward. I'll point it out, but I don't think it's slowing him down this time.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. We come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Heard around the country, heard around the world. President of the United States speaking right now as he continues to make news over in the Netherlands at The Hague. We'll bring you some of that information. It's been a very action-packed 4 hours there since he arrived last night. Be able to communicate with the Trump team. They want to get a few things straightened out, and I'm going to look to do that with you guys today. Mike Rogers standing by. He wants to be the next senator from Michigan. Got so close last time. Looks like he's got an open seat to go for this time. And Sean Davis is the CEO and co-founder of the Federalist will be with us, too. And then Seth Barron will go up close and personal on what happened with this election, this primary election last night, which leads me to the big three.
Number three.
Republicans are really beginning to learn how bad the big, ugly bill is for them. Republican senators are airing deep concerns behind closed doors, but they're not being honest at home to their constituents.
Chuck Schumer, big, beautiful bill, concerning. It's careening its way through the Senate. The House is going to get it soon. They want to see what's left. A lot of people are weighing in on it. I'll let you know. This is all Republicans. They can't agree on this. I'll let you know where we stand.
Number two.
We have won because New Yorkers have stood up for a city they can afford. We'll use their power to reject Donald Trump's fascism, to stop mass ICE agents from deporting our neighbors.
Stunning upset in the New York City Democratic primary mayoral race as defamed and disgraced Andrew Cuomo concedes to radical socialist and anti-Semitic Zoran Mamdani, a nondescript assemblyman who never really had a true job before that. This is good news, I believe, for Curtis Sliwa and mostly for Eric Adams. I'll explain.
Number one.
And the thing that hurts me is it's really demeaning to the pilots and the people that put that whole thing together, the generals. That was a perfect operation.
That is President Trump responding to the report out of one of 17 intelligence agencies, which is, they say, of low confidence. It says the president only set back Iran's nuclear program a couple of months. You know who disagrees with that? Iran and Israel, both of which I believe are on the ground. Let's bring in Mike Rogers, GOP candidate, and he's running for senator, and an FBI guy who's also got a military background. Mike, welcome back. I'll tell you, I don't know exactly how much damage is done. Nobody does to the 12 nuclear sites and the three that we hit. But for the DIA to come out, and you know this business and you know the people, to say on low confidence, we only think the centrifuges weren't really hit. We only think not enough was collapsed. We only think they set the program back 2 or 3 months. And it leaks to the same reporters that brought out the Russian hoax and the 51 intel agents that told us the laptop wasn't real. What does that tell you?
None of that smells right to me, Brian. And thanks for having me on. Listen, and all of these things take some time to do. So why they would even get this out this early is beyond me. And you know how this works. But there's all the different ways you collect intelligence on something like this called battle damage assessment, including, by the way, they have ways of seeing through spectrographs what kind of materials are coming out of those holes. So they'll be able to tell through all of that, through human sources that will be picking up information from electronic collection, you know, picking up information, something called MAZINT, which is that way of that spectral assessing the kinds of materials coming out of those holes, all of those things. And then, of course, certainly the GEOINT, all of the spatial and photography that happens. It'll take a little bit of time to get the exact assessment. To come out this early is nonsense. And that, you know, one of the best clues ought to be the fact that Iran is reaching back out to the IAEA and saying, okay, we're ready to have talks again. That tells you that it was more than just a small setback in their nuclear program.
It's amazing. Fordo, Natanz, and Esfahan are the places that we targeted. And what they say in the report, they said they did not destroy the core components of the country's nuclear program and likely only set it back months. Now, I'm not going to – that's what they think, and that's what they think, and you know more about intelligence than I'll ever know. But why they had to rush this out, and if you wonder why President Trump outrages the traditional Washington establishment by questioning the intelligence so often, is because of things like this. This is pure politics. We got to rush this out. President's going to a NATO summit to get ahead of them and force the narrative to defend the attack and the effectiveness instead of what it means for the region and the country. That's why he keeps the circle so tight. That's why he gutted so many people. And that's why he doesn't always think twice before he looks at the intelligence that he gets. It's a bad place we're in.
Yeah, no, I agree. And why somebody thinks that they should have put that out to influence policy tells me they ought to be fired, if not in jail, honestly.
What do you think, Mike, as a guy that's been on the House Select Intelligence Committee, what do you think about the president's decision?
I think it was exactly the right decision. So when I left the chairmanship in 2014, we knew a couple of things. That Iran had a ballistic missile program, got to have that. They had enrichment capability, by the way, which the Obama administration let them keep in the deal, which allowed them to continue to enrich to weapons grade, which, you know, in and of itself was a disaster. And we knew that they had supercomputers and modeling so that you could form that material on the top of a missile. And so people say, well, nobody tested it. Well, nowadays, you don't really need to test it if you have these supercomputers that can do this modeling in the way that we knew Iran had this capability through supercomputers. That was 10 years ago. So think about it. You're damn right they had the capability. And what I think the Israelis saw was increased activity around there when the Israelis were having success with their anti-missile systems, meaning they were accelerating their ability to get it, because wouldn't that be interesting, announcing I have a bomb right in the middle of all of this? This is absolutely a nation that cannot get it. I mean, they've killed lots of Americans. I mean, we all know the list, including the 243 U.S. Marines they bombed in Beirut and that they killed, the U.S. soldiers in Iraq through introducing these very sophisticated IEDs. These are the main sponsors of terrorism in the Middle East and the main cause for chaos, and they wanted a nuclear bomb. Can't let that happen. I don't think we had a big window. I think this the president took it under exigent circumstances and said,
right,
let's disrupt the nuclear program. And by the way, let's try to pursue peace after that. That's exactly what he's doing. And here's one last thing that drives me crazy. Let's just say they didn't get all of it. They didn't get 90%. They got 70% of the program. If you find other places where they're trying to put it back together, that gives us a whole nother set of options. We didn't have those options before all this happened. So how any analyst could come out, and you know, analysts is where you get in trouble. It's not the operators. It's always the analysts that screw this stuff up. And then somebody thinks that they're smarter than the world and has to leak it. Boy, that's why that stuff is so dangerous. And that's why they need to pursue an investigation on who did that.
So on behalf of the Israeli Atomic Energy Commission, they just put this out. The devastating U.S. strike on Fordo destroyed the site's critical infrastructure and rendered the enrichment facility inoperable. We assessed that the American strikes on Iran's facilities, combined with Israel's strikes on other elements of their nuclear program, has set back Iran's ability to develop nuclear weapons by many years. This achievement can continue indefinitely if Iran does not get access to nuclear material. And then the Rafael Grossi weighed in here with Marthal yesterday, cut 10.
The Iranian nuclear program has been set back significantly. It is clear that there is one Iran before June 13, nuclear Iran, and one now. And there is it's night and day. It's a new reality now. Iran has far less capabilities than it had in the past.
So what changes now? We know the president of Iran says he wants to go back to talks. Since 1979, we've had the same story with Iran. They're just different presidents and different levels of threat. So tell me, can you look ahead, Mike Rogers, and tell me what you expect the tone and tenor to be going forward?
Well, I mean, the fact that they want to talk, I look, you know, if I'm an eternal optimist, I think that's a good sign. But what we have to do as a country is not be willing to play the game we've played for the last 30 years, which is, you know, give them a little bit here. Don't worry about it. Appeasement, the Obama administration, and give them cash for hostages. I mean, all of that has just strengthened Iran. This ought to be a negotiation where you've just lost, and now we're going to accept what Iran looks like without nuclear weapons. Let's have that negotiation. And I'm not talking about, you know, the Ayatollah has to walk up with his hands up in the air, although that would be a nice day for the world, probably. But I'm just talking about the fact that they can't have this nuclear capability, and we have to defang their Quds Force and IRGC in the way that they've been sponsoring terrorism around the world. And the exporting of this missile technology, there's really key components here that we can get in a negotiation. If they really want peace, then they have to stop exporting terror, violence, and death. And I'd start there. And if they are not willing to do that, then I think you got to let Israel continue to do what Israel does to try to degrade their ability to cause death and destruction across the Middle East. And by the way, the world, because they're sharing that technology with North Korea, with Russia. I mean, this is a bad regime that survives on exporting violence. And we have to come. That has to come to an end.
It's just amazing. Look, I want the press to do reports, ask tough questions. I want to do the same thing when I talk to the president. But you got to be able to answer the questions, and also at least approach it where you could say, "I need to get answers," rather than try to skew the American public. Here's an example of a clueless reporter that probably doesn't know she's clueless. Erin Burnett talking about Iran. I guess trying to paint Iran as the good guys. Listen to this. Cut 23.
I remember, Dan, at one point being in Tehran years ago, and they're chanting death to America all around me, even as I say, oh, I'm an American reporting for CNN, and they were happy to speak to me. So that, those two sort of jarring realities of the chant and yet the friendliness have existed together.
Just I want to kill you, but I also like to shake your hand. Did you really think that that was a clarifying moment that you needed to share? I mean, how crazy is that?
It just sounds absurdly naive, honestly. You have a nation, you know, listen, this is the same nation that in 2009, when people who probably did want to walk up and shake her hand, who had nothing to do with the government, are just trying to survive, decided to stand up, and the Obama administration turned their back on them, and they got beaten and thrown in prison and killed and took missing from the Iranian intelligence and defense services. It is run, it's a theocracy, basically run by the military and intelligence services. So when they say deaths to America, that's a chant paid for, sponsored by the intelligence services, who really mean death to America. So I don't, it just sounds so absurd to me that they would say, well, I found one nice guy that shook my hand. Yeah, there are Iranians who don't want to live under the theocracy. They don't have a choice. And right now, the people who have control of the weapons and the terror export plots all happen to be in power. That's who you're negotiating with. That's who you have to deal with. And the reality is you have to defang that. And how that goes, I think, is going to be important in these negotiations. But you have to give some leeway here to get that done. And I'm not talking about boots on the ground. I mean, everybody always defaults, oh, this is a big act of war and they're going to suck us into World War III. That's not going to happen. We've been in a proxy war with Iran, the rest of the world, I'm talking, not just us, but Israel, our Arab League partners for the last 20, 30 years. I mean, we've all been victims of this stuff. And now I think it's just this rare, unique opportunity because we showed strength, which is really important. You can't have peace without strength. It's peace through strength. This is the strength part that people, you know, I think, but don't really understand the purpose of it. And it's not tanks over the border. It is surgical strikes, decapitate their capability to go nuclear, which was their big umbrella for more violence. Now let's sit down and talk. You want to be peaceful? That's great. But we're not tolerating it anymore. So let's have a real conversation. I think that's what President Trump has just done. He set up that negotiation in a way we can actually win it. For the future of peace and prosperity, not only in the region, for the rest of the world.
I want you to see there were ICE arrested 16 Iranian nationals illegally in the U.S. since Sunday. With it's estimated we have at least 700 who came over the last 4 years, some of which were snipers from their intelligence agencies. Got a 45-year-old who was previously convicted of assault with a deadly weapon. So the list goes on. I love the way the FBI is responding directly to the threat. Sleeper cells are a worry. Are they a worry for you with your FBI background?
Yeah, I'll tell you this. In the first Gulf War, I was a young FBI agent working organized crime in Chicago. We all got a stop work order. Everybody collapsed on trying to find, surveil, and determine what the plots were for Iraqi, at the time, sleeper cells. Yes, they exist. Now, the interesting thing about the Iraqis is that it wasn't philosophically based. So they got here and were here for 10 years and decided they liked America, didn't do some of the orders that they were given. I think it's kind of comical. You won't find that with the Iranians. Those same sleeper cells are here, but they are fanatics, and that's the difference. That's why we worry more about Iranian sleeper cells, because they will do it. They'll do it for religious reasons, which is very, very different than the Iraqis that we were chasing around in Chicago back in the first Gulf War. So yeah, absolutely. And it's we have 2 million people that got in and got away that we don't know who they are. We don't know what country they came from. We don't know what their intentions are. They're all over the country, and that just absolutely taxes our resources.
I know you're running for Senate again. You're trailing, I guess, to the early polls by 1.5% to Haley Stevens. What's going to be the difference this time?
Well, first of all, that was a Democrat-skewed poll. They oversampled Democrats. So a Republican normally starts out, and as a matter of fact, the last go-round, I started out 8 points down, and I got within 0.3%. Winning that race, about 230 votes separated us per county, if you can think of that. So we're using that momentum. We believe right now we are in the best shot we've ever had in 32 years to take back this seat. Great name ID. If we just get 85% of people who already voted for us, this is the key to come back out and vote. We have enough votes in the bank for people who already voted for us.
Well, you'd be huge asset in the Senate. Mike Rogers, thanks so much. He's a GOP candidate. Thank you, Mike. Back in a moment.
Thanks, Brian.
You got it. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We work to counter Iran's efforts to develop nuclear weapons and missile technology.
Iran should not have a nuclear weapon. Period.
I have stated that Iran will never be allowed to obtain a nuclear weapon.
We will not allow Iran to acquire a nuclear weapon.
Iran's key nuclear enrichment facilities have been completely and totally obliterated.
So you got one says it won't happen, and then one took it out. And now you're getting criticism from it, or people say the hit wasn't great enough. That was with past presidents, as you know, talking about Iran not having a nuclear weapon. Now I think Iran even knows it. They also have been humiliated. No air force, no leading commanders, all dead. They have their leading scientists, all dead. Their version of the CIA intelligence experts, all dead. Who knows how many others are dead? And they have no air defense. President of the United States speaking now says he'll back Article 5, but is ripping Spain for refusing to go from 2% to 5%. You just got a question about that. He's going to wrap up at NATO shortly. We'll give you an idea of what he said. Talk to Sean Davis yet, CEO and co-founder of The Federalist. And then Seth Barron, bring us inside this controversial New York election for the Democratic primary. A lot going on today. So glad you're here.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
And I would just add, I had a very successful lunch meeting with the senators. I think that we are on track for a vote this Friday for July 4th for the tax bill. President is doing peace deals, tax deals, trade deals, so he's done a peace deal. I think we'd have the tax deal done by July 4th, and then we can finish with the trade deals.
Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, hopeful to get something done by or out of the Senate by the 4th. But I think the House is going to stand by to stamp it and say, OK, let's do it. But they seem to be dug in and upset. I'm looking at Ralph Norman. He says there's a real problem with what I'm seeing coming from the Senate side. I'm looking at some other quotes on the so-called Big Beautiful Bill. Keith Self says the changes that we're hearing about are not good. Mike Johnson told the Senate, don't send us back a revised bill, significantly revised bill, because we passed one with a one-vote margin. Andy Harris, who voted present, says he doesn't like the changes the parliamentarian is not allowing. Mark Harris has a problem with it. Chip Roy has a problem with it. Lindsey Graham fired back. So are they going to get on the same page eventually? Sean Davis is the CEO and co-founder of The Federalist and joins us now. Sean, what do you think? I mean, we're focusing on the war, and we should, and the battle over the Middle East and NATO. But what about the Big Beautiful Bill? I understand it's furiously being debated.
Right. I think what we're seeing in the Senate right now is kind of they're setting the stage for what's really the beginning of negotiations. You know, 101 of lawmaking is the House has to pass something, the Senate has to pass something, and before it gets sent to the president, they've got to agree on the same thing. And so I think a lot of what's happening in the Senate now is jockeying and trying to get the House to take whatever the Senate sends back over without demanding a conference or without ping-ponging a different version back. I suspect the House is going to have a really tough time swallowing that, just given how thin their margins are. You know, like was said there, they've got one vote margin in the House. The Senate has, you know, theoretically, I think three when you consider the 50-50 tie. So I think we're seeing people laying the groundwork for the beginning stage of negotiations here. And as you know, as well as anyone, 2 weeks in politics is an eternity. We've got a long time just to get to the point where the Senate passes it, let alone the House and the Senate have an agreement on it.
Why is it that they're having such a hard time getting rid of all the new Green Deal stuff? It's because a lot of this stuff landed in Republican districts and it got people want to get the money that's coming their way, the contracts that are coming out. And the president doesn't like to see all that in the bill either.
Well, I think one of the favorite pastimes in Congress, and it's a bipartisan affliction, is they love spending other people's money. They love going out with the big check and doing the ribbon cutting. It happens with Republicans as well as Democrats. And it's one thing to say on the campaign trail, yeah, we're going to repeal it. But Republicans don't have a great track record. I remember hearing the same thing about that with Obamacare. For years and years, you give us the House, Senate, and presidency, and we're going to repeal Obamacare. And then as soon as they're back in and they have the opportunity to do that, they don't do it. So I think the problem is a lot of politicians just really enjoy spending money. And when it comes time to actually take away that privilege, which is one of the biggest perks of the office, You have a lot of people getting cold feet, unfortunately.
Well, we know with Medicaid, Obamacare blew it up. So they got 90% reimbursement from the federal government. There's no incentive in the states to not hand it out to everybody that gets close to eligible. It's supposed to be for seniors, for people that have been injured, wounded, handicapped. It's not ended up that way. And now it's ballooning. And every time you go to rein it in, people like Senator Josh Hawley say, don't touch it. And other people say, I'm worried about it. And here's what Mike Johnson said. The president of the United States says don't touch it, but you have to touch it if you want any semblance of fiscal responsibility. Cut 37.
It's, of course, nonsense. We had their ads taken down when they began to claim that early on in the process. We are not cutting Medicaid. We are strengthening the program for the people that desperately need it and deserve it, the populations that Medicaid is intended to help, and that's the elderly and the disabled and, you know, young pregnant women, for example. So what we're doing is reinstituting work requirements, which is about an 85% issue in public opinion polling, because if a young, able-bodied man is able to work, he should. So we put into our product in the House version a 20-hour-a-week requirement, okay? Either work, be looking for a job or in a job training program, or volunteer in your community. Hey, it's good for you and everybody around you.
So they're going to do work requirements. They're also going to look at eligibility, look at people collecting in multiple states, so fraud and abuse. So they think they can get something tangible out of it. What do you think, Sean?
Yeah, it's frustrating being, a citizen who in part has to pay for all this and kind of knowing the fiscal trajectory of this nation. Obviously, we want to help people who are unable to help themselves. But the thing that Democrats politically understand so much better than Republicans is that if you can pass an entitlement, if you can pass a new giveaway, you basically have it for eternity. This was done on the Republican side with the prescription drug bill back in, I think, 2001 with Bush, one of the biggest entitlement expansions in history. It happens with Medicaid. It happened with Obamacare. Once you get people used to that spigot of federal money and assistance coming through, it's really, really hard to get rid of it. It's a one-way ratchet. And like I said, as the person who has to pay for it, I find it really frustrating that Congress is so happy to create new programs and yet paralyzed and incapable of ever reining them in so we don't eventually go bankrupt.
Yeah, we'll have to see if it does indeed pass. It seems like it's not rating high, but not many people know what's actually in the bill, because as soon as the bill was front and center, it seems to get swamped by other breaking news. That is part of it. Now they're running ads against each other. When you look at the trade deals, I'm hearing that countries are confused. They don't know who to speak to regarding who's got final say on the deals. We hear about India, Canada. We have deals that are about to come across from Japan, but nothing's been done since the UK. What do you hear, Sean, about the new trade arrangements to avoid tariffs?
Yeah, you actually nailed a significant problem, and it's that it is incredibly difficult for a president to go and negotiate these deals. You know, it's a high wire act. It's a really important thing. It affects a lot of people. And when he goes in and negotiates things, I think people generally trust Trump. If he tells you something in a deal, you can book it, but it still has to go back to Congress. It still has to go back and get approved. We're almost in July right now. We're halfway through the year. And the Senate hasn't even approved large swaths of Trump's nominees, of pending federal judges. And I think you have four nations who rightfully are concerned. Hey, we did this deal for you. When is it actually going to happen? Because this stuff matters. You know, there's a shelf life on any negotiation or any real deal. And I think it's a real concern that Congress just seems incapable of getting really anything done.
Yeah, but I think the Trump administration doesn't really have to verify these nation-to-nation deals. Like the UK didn't have to get congressional approval because it wasn't a multilateral deal, correct? So the UK can cut a deal. The administration can cut a deal with Japan, with India, with Canada, with Mexico, which I hear is all close.
It's true, but you also have people, as soon as he institutes some sort of new tariff or change in policy as a result of these deals, you have people running to the courts and you have them getting injunctions and stays and temporary restraining orders. You're not allowed to do this. You're not allowed to do that. It creates a great amount of uncertainty. in unpredictability, and I think it's a real problem.
Yeah, Sean Davis, thanks so much. He's CEO and co-founder of the Federalist. Appreciate it. When we come back, Seth Barron brings us inside that Titanic election that stunned everybody with Governor Cuomo going down in flames. Don't move.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Tonight was not our night. Tonight was Assemblyman Mandani's night, and he put together a great campaign, and he touched young people and inspired them and moved them and got them to come out and vote. And he really ran a highly impactful campaign. I called him. I congratulated him. I applaud him sincerely for his effort.
That is Governor Cuomo, the former governor who left in disgrace, had to resign early. He thought everyone would forget about what a terrible governor he was and what a terrible leader he was during the pandemic and the women that he grabbed and was accused of harassing. And I think that played a role in it. And out of nowhere, this guy, Zohran Mamdani, wins. What he stands for is almost nothing good. I mean, the guy is a socialist. He's anti-Semitic. He's anti-Israel. He is pro-BDS, which means defund Israel, defund all aspects of Israel in our country, whether it's a college or Columbia and NYU. He is for defund the police. Think about that for a second. He's for social workers instead. He is for supermarkets where the city can run it and just grind them and grind the prices down and try to drive, I guess, private business out of business. Here's a little bit about what he said in the past Cut 30.
And our police force should not be assisting ICE.
Defund the NYPD and refund all of these different social services.
I will create a network of city-owned grocery stores. It's like a public option for produce.
How many more New Yorkers? How many more New Yorkers will you detain? How many more New Yorkers without charge? Do you believe in the First Amendment? Do you believe in the First Amendment, Tom Homan?
So Tom Homan was in Albany meeting with state leaders when Zohran Mamdani started screaming like a lunatic, trying to get attention. And the other ones are just things he said before with Charlemagne the God and other places. This is what this guy stands for. And without any real job, being an assemblyman for a short period of time, he is now, looks like he's got the Democratic nomination, although the second round is July 1st. No one thinks that Cuomo's going to get closer. The second round for the nomination, and it'll be Eric Adams and against him and Curtis Sliwa. And maybe Cuomo stays in. Seth Barron knows nothing as much about New York sports as anyone. He's a New York Post editorial page writer, successful author. Seth, welcome back. Were you one of the people surprised that Mamdani won?
I was not that surprised. I mean, if you've been watching for a while, he had a lot of energy, has a very activated base. Cuomo, I don't know what he was doing. He seemed to be asleep at the wheel. He had a lot of money, but there was no campaign going on. So, Democrat primaries are very tilted to the left, and they're pretty low turnout. So an activated campaign can win. The funny thing is, I often wondered when Mamdani was screaming at Tom Homan and trying to push his way through the line of state troopers, what would he have done had he gotten through? Like, was he going to beat up Tom Homan? It was a very odd moment.
Absolutely, yeah, that's a good point. And what about Lander the next week getting just dragged out because he was protecting illegal immigrants in a courthouse? So we have a turnout of 432,000. That's roughly what Mamdani got, 362,000 for Cuomo. So that's why he conceded. But do you think that's a good turnout?
I mean, no, not particularly. I mean, New York City generally has pretty low turnout. The weather was scorching, so a lot of the people who waited for election day probably didn't come. And Cuomo didn't do a very good job of getting out the vote. I think he counted on the unions and like the black ministers who had endorsed him to do all the legwork. Doesn't work that way. I mean, the one good thing is there is a possibility that Mamdani has already gotten all his voters, right? Like, he may have hit his ceiling. Like, his voters were very excited, and they all turned out, but maybe they all turned out. See what I'm saying?
Yes.
So there is a chance that, you know, he's not going to add a lot more as time goes, as you know, the next 4 months. It's a long time. But, yeah, we've got to wait and see if Cuomo drops out. Mm-hmm. And then what Curtis Sliwa does, it could split the vote. I mean, we very easily could have, like, an anti-Semitic socialist mayor in New York City.
Wow. So I asked Eric Adams that. He was on Fox and Friends today, the current mayor, now is an independent, recently exonerated from all his indictments by this president. Here he is talking about splitting the vote.
Best, and that's campaign and share the story. My story has been overshadowed by so many external things, particularly lawfare. Once I'm able to show the success, highest number of jobs in our city history, lowest number of shootings and homicides in the recorded history of the city during this year, 12 months of Broadway, the greatest 12 months in the history of the city, dropping unemployment. When I'm out there showing how I improved the quality of life without all of that noise, you know, remember, I went through 15 months of just constant beating, but yet I'm still here.
So he feels good. He says his phone was ringing all night with people looking to get on board because they're concerned about Mamdani being the mayor. I don't think he would have got those calls if Cuomo had gotten the nomination. Do you agree?
Oh, I absolutely agree. If Cuomo had gotten the nomination, he'd be a shoo-in for mayor. This is unprecedented what we're facing now. We could see a kind of popular front uniting against Mamdani to save the city.
What kind of guy is he?
Eric Adams.
How do you view him?
Mamdani?
Yeah.
I view him as a grifter, as a Nepo baby. You know, both of his parents are extremely successful, extremely well-connected. I feel like he was groomed for this. I think on a certain level he's very cynical, but he does have a deep, deep loathing of Israel, the Zionist project, and he's very close to people who were frankly just outright anti-Semites. So I think this is really his main issue. He talks about socialism and all of that, and yeah, he probably believes some of it, but as he said himself, his main thing is Palestine, and his father's an anti-colonialist scholar at Columbia. This is the family project to essentially destroy settler colonies like Israel, like America, like Canada, Australia, all the countries that are supposedly stolen on stolen land. He's got like a very, very dark and ugly ideological path.
He looks like he's made for the squad. He's like, maybe he could be a local squad member. I mean, they hate the country. If you ask me, I mean, AOC was a big proponent. Didn't she run the AOC playbook of trying to surprise an established candidate by going to young people using social media?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was the exact same playbook. And look, it didn't hurt that he was the only telegenic candidate. I mean, Brad Lander. I mean, these are people who are like kind of, you know,
Adrian Adams,
sort of wet rags. He's young. He's handsome. He's very well spoken. He's bright. He's very good on his feet. So, you know, in a way, it's not that big a surprise that he won the youth vote and got them to come out. Look, again, New York City is legendary for having dismal turnout in its primaries. And typically, if you win the Democratic primary, you will become the mayor. So that's the way, you know, that's what he banked on.
Real quick,
Seth,
do you think Cuomo runs as an independent?
I do not think so. He had one shot. You don't get two shots at redemption in the same week.
Gotcha. Seth Baron, thanks so much. Fascinating time. Great to get your insight. Nobody better. Seth, thank you. Brian Kilmeade Show.
From high atop Fox
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the show. Martha McCallum coming in about 15 minutes. Colonel C.J. Douglas, retired Marine Corps guy with a lot of experience in the region that we're focusing on, the Middle East, will be with us shortly, too. And we're taking new calls. 1-866-408-7669. A lot going on today. Local elections, major news overseas. The President of the United States, I guess, is going to abide by Article 5, and if attacked, he's going to back you up. He didn't make that definitive, but he is pumped up that they're now spending most of these nations, 32 nations, committed to 5% of their GDP on defense. The bigger question is, where does all this defense come from? Because we do not have the military hardware and the industrial base to do it. And he did say that he's going to try to get Patriot missiles to Ukraine, which I think is good. And I think we got to start repurposing some of the money that Russia has invested in the West that we froze. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Republicans are really beginning to learn how bad the big ugly bill is for them. Republican senators are airing deep concerns behind closed doors, but they're not being honest at home to their constituents.
Believe me, it's not anything that Democrats could be happy about. Big, beautiful bill careening way through the Senate. Senator Thune says we're going to stay through the holidays until we can get a version to the House. How does the House feel about some of the changes? Many are not happy.
Number two.
We have won because New Yorkers have stood up for a city they can afford. We'll use their power to reject Donald Trump's fascism, to stop mass ICE agents from deporting our neighbors.
Stunning upset in New York City primary. Andrew Cuomo goes down in flames, loses by about 100,000 votes to upstart unknown radical socialist Zohran Mamdani. Bernie Sanders and AOC couldn't be happier, which makes me very sad. Good news for Curtis Sliwa, the Republican, and Eric Adams, the Independent.
Number one.
And the thing that hurts me is it's really demeaning to the pilots and the people that put that whole thing together, the generals. That was a perfect operation.
That was a perfect operation. But how effective it was now has people in the Defense Department questioning it. The strike in Iran's under scrutiny. Deep State maximized the strike on nuke sites and says it was no big deal. Really? Don't get distracted. It was a huge deal. And you know who knows it? The Iranians. You know who confirmed it? The Israelis. But one thing they did immediately after the strike, within I think the next day, was they hit our base in Qatar. What happened was interesting is the militias who hit our base in Iraq after the killing of the mastermind of the Al-Quds force was the fact is they didn't. Militias didn't act. Surrogates did not act. Hamas, Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad, Hezbollah, as well as the Houthis. Why is that? Are they not capable, or they don't want to be backing up Iran that didn't back them up? Let's bring in on Zoom Colonel C.J. Douglas. Colonel, welcome back. You've been at the base in Qatar. Are you surprised that the missile defense was more than able to knock down these rockets?
Hi, Brian. Great to talk to you again. No, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, you're confident in the system and in the service members that are employing it, and in our relationship with our partners in the region that are all part of the multilateral defense.
Where were they? How much warning did they get? Do you know?
So, Brian, while I'm not aware of how much they got, as we can see, it was enough that, coupled with the defense systems, that it was effective to negate any U.S. casualties.
How worried were you about the militias in Iraq lining up our guys at the bases in Iraq?
That's a good question, Brian. And so, you know, I can't say that I was specifically concerned about any one group, because quite frankly, there were enough threats everywhere. Now, that said, each time was different, as you're probably alluding to, the 2015-16 timeframe. That really was the complex time, because as you recall, the Biden administration delayed action, which gave Iran the ability to put advisors And, you know, we saw that's where the rise of Kataib Hezbollah, the Quds Force, et cetera, specifically in Al-Anbar province, which, as you and I have talked about before, you know, that's what we saw. And we did see, you know, we did have conflict with them, although the main conflict was with ISIS. So while, you know, I, you know, it was in the back of my mind, but it wasn't, you know, there was enough to think about security and offensive action for enough threats that for that, it was just like, it was just another threat like anything else.
So what do you think the reason is that Israel, that Iran didn't have any of their surrogates acting at all against Israel and didn't act against our troops, being that after Soleimani was taken out, the Iraqi base was rocketed?
Right. I mean, there could be a number of reasons. I mean, you know, I think probably the most simplistic one is, you know, the overwhelming response. I mean, the administration and the service members demonstrated that we could fly around the globe at night and strike at will deep into their homeland. So that said, I mean, you know, I think we all knew that they had to do a response, and they did, and it was negated. So, you know, as far as why they haven't, it could just be tactical patience. It could be that they're aligning with any number of, as you've talked about previously, any number of the military age males that have come across our southern border, that it could be an attack on the homeland. You know, we don't know. History will determine what that, why there wasn't a response.
So what do you think it is that since you were there, how many times were you in Iraq?
Three.
How many times in Afghanistan?
Twice.
So how different is it now with Syria now in the hand with out of the hands of Assad, no longer a surrogate of Iran? And how different is it now that Iran seems to be cut down to size and they play such a outsized influence in Iraq? How different are things in those two countries now?
Well, I think, you know, it's not just those two countries. I think it's regionally the, you know, Iran has been the big bully of the region. And so, you know, Israel has showed that through, you know, tenacity and physical, you know, presence and, you know, they've gone after, you know, the big bully in the region. Nobody wants to align with them, obviously, but, you know, but with that, I think that, you know, what hopefully will come out of this as we start to look towards diplomacy and what the president, you know, right now as he's forward is, hopefully we'll look to build coalitions with the Europeans and regional partners. And then there'll be a unified message on human rights and civil liberties in Iran. And so hopefully what we'll see come out of it is, there's no, right now we haven't seen attacks from any of the proxies. And so maybe that will facilitate some sort of peaceful resolution where we can see a stable Middle East.
Do you think, what is your assessment of the Department of the Defense Intelligence Agency coming forward, even though it's low confidence, with not much damage done after the biggest bombs were dropped, non-nuclear bombs on the planet, multiple bombs on three separate sites? What is your assessment of how that got out and the damage it's done?
So I don't think we can determine how much damage, you know, their assessment has done. I think we have to look at, you know, why it was released and who released it and really, you know, I don't think, you know, given the magnitude of the strikes, I'm surprised that they're saying that there wasn't, you know, that much damage. I think I've seen, you know, even on Fox, there was, you know, report of, you know, trucks lined up prior to. And I mean, knowing what we know about our intelligence community, that, you know, we wouldn't have just let those trucks go away unless there was a reason. Now, going back to the strikes, I think this is another one that time is going to tell. And as, you know, I mentioned, you know, diplomacy, I think that one of the things that is going to have to come forward out of this is there's going to have to be some sort of independent group that goes in and looks at what their capabilities are and what limitations they have
for future. Victor Davis Hanson said, what is the new situation and what the Israelis have actually accomplished along with us. Cut 17.
We've lived in a 50-year myth, a Potemkin myth about the Iranians, that they had this indomitable army and Hezbollah was these goose goose-stepping Nazi killers. And, you know, whether it was a Marine barracks or killing Americans in Iraq, we were always told you can't do this to Iran because they're indomitable. And in 12 days, Israelis blew up that myth, and Trump put the coup de grace on it. They have no air defenses. They have no air force. They have no top physicists. As you said, the top leadership is in hiding. The generals have been killed off. The Hezbollah is a shambles, maimed, dead, or in hiding. There is no Hamas, really. The Houthis want to make a deal. There's no Syria anymore, no platform for their supplies. Russia's been kicked out. This is just a miraculous development. It's a whole new Middle East, and here the left can't even appreciate what's happened.
Victor Davis Hanson is not one for hyperbole. He's a historian, a military historian. There's nothing he said that was anything but accurate. Don't you agree?
Oh, I would absolutely agree. And one of the things to think about is, I mean, you know, you look at, you know, historically, I mean, they took a pretty good beating when they fought Iran. Now, that said, it didn't, you know, they didn't go into submission. So, you know, while all this was successful and while, you know, I agree with everything he said in the way forward, you know, I think we stay away from regime change. I mean, because what we don't want to do is make a martyr out of, you know, the supreme leader. And, you know, and I think because, and it goes away from, you know, the U.S.'s only goal is to take, you know, take, deny people nuclear weapons, which they and others have, and also execute regime change with people they don't like. It's like, hey, you know, you fix this. The next thing is, yeah, all the senior leadership. I mean, you know, the Israel strikes were, you know, were phenomenal. And you've talked about that. The thing to remember is that, you know, there's levels deep. You know, the best analogy I can give you is when we were, you know, each of the commander's courses that I went to in the Marine Corps, you know, the senior leader that came in was the commandant, you know, two separate commandants. And, you know, as they, you know, you're all like, hey, we're now, you know, senior leaders. And it's like, hey, make no mistake, congratulations. But if a bus of you all went off a cliff, we'd have you replaced tomorrow. Well, it's the same thing there. It might not be somebody who has the experience. It might be somebody who, you know, who frankly is you know, is the next Patton in Iran. That said, I agree with everything that Victor Davis Hanson said.
Yeah, they're going to be replaced, but they've been assassinated. They all got to check their phones to the location, who's driving them, following them, because the Israelis have penetrated every aspect of Iranian society. And there was a report today in the Israel news that about 700 people have been rounded up in Iran and hung. They say they affiliated with or directly with the Israelis. So they have paid a price for that, if that report is indeed true. Thanks so much, Colonel Douglas. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, Brian. And one last thing, though, Brian, with that report, I mean, and I hope this is something that the administration and others capitalize on. The fact that I'm hearing it here and we're not hearing it on other news stations, like, we've got to amplify the voices of those Iranian dissidents so that they, you know, that their story's told. Thanks very much for having me on, Brian.
You got it. All right. When we come back, Martha McCallum joins us in studio and we'll squeeze in some calls. You'll listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. We're now seeing going back to Capitol Hill shortly, find out about the latest on the big beautiful bill. We'll also find out about the Democrats are supposed to get their intelligence briefing about what led up into that attack. Evidently, now they're very curious. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Deborah Haynes from Sky News. Mark Rutter, the NATO chief, who is your friend, he called you daddy earlier. Do you regard your NATO allies as kind of children?
No, he likes me. I think he likes me. If he doesn't, I'll let you know. I'll come back and I'll hit him hard, okay?
No? But do you
he did.
Regard...
He did it very affectionately. He, daddy, you're my daddy.
That was
were you watching the press? Marco Rubio was cracking up behind him. I mean, Marco Rubio had such a, you know, game face on the whole time, and then he was like,
So Martha McCallum's here. Martha, so that I didn't see the press conference. I'm doing the show at the same time.
Yeah.
You said there were a few things to emerge from that press conference that you think were noteworthy.
Yeah, I think so. I was watching it along with Bill Malusian and Dana Live, and you know, I think a couple of things. I think that the major take, you know, obviously, as President Trump said moments ago, it's only been a couple of days. There is no full assessment other than what we can all see very clearly, is massive destruction. And I interviewed the IAEA chief yesterday, who said, you know, there is significant damage to these sites. And he said there's Iran before that strike, and there's Iran after. And there's no better evidence of that, I don't think, Brian, than Iran's own posture before and after the strike. What did they do before? They were, you know, bombing everybody and building a nuclear program. What are they doing after? They basically, the war ended. They agreed to a ceasefire almost immediately after they looked at what happened in that strike. And not only that, they gave us a heads up. Gee, we have to essentially, here's what they're saying. For our own, to save face at home, we have to retaliate to you, but we're going to be sending missiles to Qatar, to the biggest base you have. And we want you to know before we do it, because they don't want to kill any Americans, because they don't want to incite more war, because they're on their backs.
So do you think that, and by the way, I want you to hear that comment. Here's cut 10.
The Iranian nuclear program has been set back significantly. It is clear that there is one Iran before June 13, nuclear Iran, and one now. And there is, it's night and day. It's a new reality now. Iran has far less capabilities than it had in the past.
So, Martha, do you think that if CNN or New York Times got a hold of a DIA report that says they've been obliterated, there's nothing left, they went inside, do you think they would have rushed to publish that? Do you think they would have rushed to broadcast that?
No. I mean, I think sadly what is very obvious is that there are certain interpreters of what happened who are just hoping for a way to minimize it and to make it look like it didn't work. Because, you know, unless Iran starts sending us a very different signal, you know, oh, look, you didn't get it. And there is a legitimate question about these 900 pounds of 60% enriched uranium. Now, when I spoke to the IAEA chief yesterday, he said that Iran told him prior to this attack that they were going to move some of that 60% enriched uranium to a safe site. And we also heard that Khamenei put that out. I mean, who knows if you can believe anything he says, you know, because he's constantly, you know, sort of death to America and everything else. Hard to tell if what he says is true. We don't know if they succeeded in moving that material out to a different site. It is possible. It's only been 3 days. We don't know absolutely everything about what happened here, and I think that will emerge. The president said something also today. He said, well, we know because people have been on the site and they've confirmed it. Now, I'm trying to figure out where that's coming from. You know, there are some suggestions that Israelis have been on the site. We know how good their intel's been in Iran lately, but I'm looking for confirmation from the IAEA today that yes, Israelis have been on the site, or they've been on the site and have had a close, you know, first person look, but we're still working on that.
Yeah. I just to tell you that there was a report out there from the Israeli news that I just sent over to you that said that they're trying to track down the spies in their midst, and Iran may have arrested and hung 700 people who they think are who are collaborating with Israel, including three Mossad agents.
I mean, that's not another that's another indication of just how strung out they are in the leadership in Iran.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I mean, it's just who they are. And I think people are frustrated. We know that they hate the president. And it's, look, they're an extension. They are the left wing of the Democrat Party. And the Democrat Party right now, they have no positive agenda for the country. They are a party of anger and hate. They hate the president. We just saw an incredible military strike that successfully took out Iran's nuclear weapons capability. And what are the Democrats doing this week? They're voting on trying to disapprove President Trump defending America. And Jesse, one of the important things to understand, the attack that President Trump carried out this weekend, yes, it was supporting our friend and ally Israel, but much more importantly, it was defending America. Because when the Ayatollah chants death to America, I believe him.
Right. So Ted Cruz just talking about how the senator from Texas, Martha McCallum, was just how the media is going out of their way to immediately say, number one, shouldn't have taken the strike. Number two, it wasn't effective, and they don't have a plan. You saw Mark Kelly last night, first time I saw that soundbite with Brett. Oh, they don't have no plan. They don't know what they're doing. It's chaos. So they've used that term chaos to describe Trump. They like to do that. But it doesn't apply here. There's no chaos. It's very organized, very, very well executed. I know exactly what led up to it. And now we're waiting to see what Iran's going to do after it.
Yeah, I mean, prior to the strike, Israel and Iran were at war.
Yeah.
After the strike, there's a ceasefire. Will it hold? Who knows? We don't know what's going to happen. But as a member of the United States Senate, and also as someone who has supported, you know, prior Democrat presidents, Clinton, Obama, you know, all of these presidents going back to Bush have wanted to, you know, they all said no nuclear weapons in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
They all were aspirational about achieving no nuclear weapons in Iran. They tried deals, they tried negotiations, nothing worked. So now we have this strike, which I don't care, you know, show me a country that isn't, if they're not openly, isn't reservedly supportive, isn't glad that somebody finally took a bomb to these facilities. So, you know, I find it's almost so knee-jerk. It's so predictable. It would be really interesting to see some unpredictable reaction,
yeah,
to see a Democrat who said, you know what, look, we've all, you know, long wanted to cool things off in this region. And how about the fact that nobody is coming to their defense? Not Russia, not China. None of the axis of evil, maybe it doesn't exist anymore.
Not even their surrogates.
Right. So, you know, I mean, it'd be good just to hear a mature sort of reasoned take on this from Mark Kelly, as an American who doesn't want to see Iran have nuclear weapons.
So I want you to hear what Anthony Blinken put in the New York Times today in an op-ed. He said, Trump's Iran strike was a mistake. I hope it succeeds. The strike on three of Iran's nuclear facilities by the U.S., unnecessary and unwise. Now that it's done, I very hope it succeeds. As of now, there are conflicting messages. If and when it does, we get answers when we would take Tehran 18 to 24 months to produce an explosive device, according to some estimates. In other words, there was still time for diplomacy to work, and the situation wasn't nearly the emergency that Trump portrayed it to be. He said, it underscores that sticking with the JCPOA was the better option. I bought us at least 15 years instead of just a few, and it avoided the risk of Iranian retaliation, such as Monday's missile attacks directed our forces in the region, as well as the potential for further escalation, including threatening global oil flows through the Strait of Hormuz. What's your take?
Has he seen the chart that shows the increase in enriched uranium levels over the past 2 years?
It
skyrockets at the end of that chart. So, you know, President Obama said, it's clear that at the levels they're enriching, they're not interested in an energy program. They're not interested in an energy program. So they're enriching to levels that can only be on their way to having a nuclear program. The really sad thing for Iran, I don't know. Again, wouldn't it be interesting to hear Anthony Blinken? And I guess he's going sort of in that direction when he says, I hope it succeeds. But what it shows is just a lack of guts.
Right.
We're seeing bold action. Now, bold action sometimes fails, but at least it's bold action. And fortune tends to favor the bold in the world. What we saw and what the contrast is so dramatic in is just the difference in tenor between the last administration and this one.
Oh, yeah.
We see action, action, action. Will it all succeed? Probably not. Will some of it succeed in probably an instrumental way? Probably.
So the JCPOA, let's think about this. You can still use ballistic missiles. We're going to give you pallets of cash because they said it was frozen and it's unfrozen.
No,
so
anywhere,
you got
anytime
money.
Inspection.
So, Martha, what did they do with that money? Did they go and build new roads and new playgrounds? No, they gave it to Hezbollah and Hamas to cause more unrest with our only ally, our major democracy in the region on a regular basis. And we did not have eyes on anything. Some of them were just cameras. So we didn't have any Americans there checking everything out. We had to go by what they were saying, the IAEA. The IAEA has been a little dicey with us in the past, and I think we are in no American presence. So to me, we basically had a deal that I think was 10 years in duration. And they said, well, once they're part of the family of nations, we're sure they're going to re-up that deal. Really? It's an expiration date, and then they can make nuclear weapons. Why would they?
That was the China philosophy that Nixon had, right? And it was an understandable approach to China at the time. You know, the more sunlight that we let in to this communist nation, the more we trade with them, the more we work with them, they'll come around. You know, the spotlight will be on them. They'll have to behave responsibly in terms of human rights and all these other issues. And now, sadly, we see that they are our greatest adversary yep. in the world after all of that. Iran and every U.S. president, Republican, Democrat, has recognized this over the last decades. They need a change at the top. The Islamic regime in place since 1979 is a human rights disaster. Women are not allowed. If you're hijab is slightly an inch off and your hair around your ears is showing, you can and do end up in prison. And in one woman's case, dead in a hospital. So let's just, you know, remember the fact that estimates that I'm hearing 80, even 90% of the Iranian public are wanting a change. Now, the president's gone back and forth on the regime change issue over the last few days. It's tricky. It does have to come from within. Even President Bush said it had to come from within way back then. But there is not only is there no support for the Iranian regime outside of it, there's almost no support inside of Iran for it.
Right. And by the way, what do you think about at Times Square, them rallying for Iran against us in Times Square all weekend?
You know what I really think more than anything, Brian, when I look at this, I think it shows the terrible lack of education in this country. We are not educating our children. Now, you can support Iran if you want to. You have a right to do that in this country. But I think that what we've done is educated an entire generation of young people who just are picking up their information off of TikTok. And they didn't learn it in school. They didn't learn about the 1979 revolution. And you can think whatever you want about it, but understand it. They didn't learn about the creation of Israel after World War II. They don't understand the dynamic of what happened under Hitler. They are very... They don't have a good education. I mean, I hate to say that about our own country, but this is true. And I know you've worked to educate people. I have too, by, you know, writing about these things and trying to get people better informed. But it smacks of a very silly, superficial culture that is getting its information off of social media. And it's really a black mark on our education history.
It really is. Joy Reid last night on a CNN panel said, why are we okay to have nuclear weapons and Iran not? He said, we have not been responsible. Remember Hiroshima? Everyone was shocked, including my guest yesterday. My guest yesterday who said, wait a second, we dropped them. We absolutely had to drop those bombs back then. Since that time, we have led non-nuclear proliferation since. Her view, Joy Reid, a primetime anchor on a major network, has that dim view of America that we can't be more trusted than Iran.
You know, the IAEA, which you talked about moments ago, and people need to understand, it's an agency. Their responsibility was created by Eisenhower. Their responsibility is to do the best they can understanding how much enriched uranium is out there, where it is, which is a big problem for them right now that they've got to figure out. But their mission is to make sure there are no nuclear accidents in the world and to make sure that we don't see more countries become nuclear capable, weapons capable. So their mission is that Iran not get a nuclear weapon. They do not. There are 9 countries in the world that have nuclear weapons capability, and they don't want there to be any more because it makes the world more dangerous. So if she doesn't understand why a country like the United States is more responsible and is part of these non-nuclear proliferation treaties, and Iran is on the outside of that, I don't know. She's got to go back and start at square zero.
Whoopi Goldberg said, it's harder to be a black woman in America than to be a woman in Iran.
I mean, I cannot imagine what she is thinking. I mean, literally, women in Iran, if you show your hair,
right,
you can be beaten and whipped in the streets by these religion police who literally walk around the streets of Tehran looking for you, looking to see if you have a hair out of place so that they can throw you in Evin prison. Evin prison is full of people who have been fighting for freedom. We have so much freedom in this country. Are we perfect? Of course we're not perfect. We try to be a more perfect nation all the time. That's our mission as Americans. But to make that comparison is so reflective of ignorance. I don't even know what else to say.
Absolutely. And by the way, remember she would, if she went to Iran, she does have the outfit from Sister Act. She would just have to leave that on the whole time, and she can't have the white rim.
It was a nun, I think.
It was a nun. But, I mean, basically the same outfit. I mean, the nun is a little bit more open. All right, so a few more minutes with Martha. She's going to tell us when we get back what's on her show. Also, I want to get her take on the mayor's race and the Democratic primary, which was stunning.
Illuminating, intriguing, inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
A lot of communications. I think I slept an hour and a half because the phone was going off all night. People understand this moment.
Coming back to you?
In a combination, a lot of people didn't leave. I was not in the primary. They said, Eric, we're going to we're going to endorse in a primary. Let's have another conversation during the general. So there was a lot of people who stated that you're not in a primary. We want to make sure that this candidate does not win. And so now you have almost a million independent voters. You have many Democrats.
That was Mayor Eric Adams on the couch with us on Fox and Friends. He was ebullient. He thinks he's got a real shot at reelection, and why not? He says that the Democratic primary that gave us Zohran Mamdani is through of left-wing, like a lot of parties, even the national parties, they're for the extremists. That's why Mamdani destroys by 100,000 votes, roughly, Andrew Cuomo, who's not a wild lefty. He's definitely a Democrat. But Martha McCallum, Eric Adams really thinks he's got a legitimate shot now. And he says, you know, like Bloomberg and others, they're going to come back to him because they don't want this guy. This guy Mamdani is so extreme. Why would anyone vote for him that was was a capitalist?
I mean, I think a lot of people were very shocked by Mamdani sort of coming up the side lane like a racehorse who managed to win in the end. He had a very strong social media game, good advertising. He, you know, sort of presents well. I think that when you go through what he actually stands for, I think a lot of people are absolutely shocked. There's absolutely no way financially for him to do the things he's talking about in terms of housing and, you know, free buses and all of this stuff. And his anti-Israel statements are abhorrent. We have a lot of Jewish voters in this state, in this city. Overall, there's a lot of conservatives who left the city during COVID, and I think that had an impact on Lee Zeldin's race. But all that said, I think that Adams does become the alternative candidate in a very strong way. What impact might it have if President Trump came to New York to campaign for Eric Adams? We know that they have a pretty good relationship. We know that Tom Homan said that, you know, he saw the cop in him when they sat down to talk. And I think that in many ways, Adams is the kind of Democrat that, you know, used to be dominant in New York City. You know, he's big on law enforcement, wants a safe city, but is, you know, liberal and Democrat in other ways in terms of social issues. So I'm shocked. I mean, I thought it was interesting. The Chicago Tribune yesterday, I think, wrote an editorial saying, don't make the mistake that we made, New York.
Yeah.
Don't do it. Don't give yourselves a Brandon Johnson. I mean, it is appalling. What would happen to the safety factor in the streets of New York City if you have someone who thinks that, you know, that cops are bad, that they shouldn't coordinate with ICE? I mean, this city has been impacted so dramatically by immigration. We have spent billions and billions of dollars housing people. I will be very surprised if Mamdani can pull out a win in November, but we'll see what happens.
Here is with Arthur Idella, our good friend, great lawyer who knows New York, Cut 31.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one happier after Mamdani and his family than Eric Adams tonight, because everyone over 50 years old who remembers Times Square in the 1970s and the 1980s when you couldn't walk through, it was all pornography and crack and muggings and rapes and robberies. Everyone who remembers that is going to vote for Eric Adams. The New York Times, who didn't make an endorsement, did say, please don't vote for Mamdani, as did the Daily News, as did the New York Post. So anybody who knows how bad New York can get, all came out against Mamdani because a 33-year-old with zero experience running anything except a little office with five employees not be running the city of New York.
I mean, I couldn't agree more with Arthur Idala. I'm kind of speechless on this. I think it's pretty incredible. But what's right. happening is you have this, you know, slice. Look across the country. Look at New York. Look at Chicago. Look at Los Angeles. You know, the three wonderful cities of the United States of America. And look at what has happened to them. And they are sort of this bastion hanging on after a presidential election that saw all the swing states go to Trump. He'll be the first one to point this out. And he's accurate in doing so. And a popular victory. But you have these islands, these tight islands in our greatest cities that are supporting these very radical candidates.
So who's going to be on your show?
So we are going to speak with Rosanna Scotto about this election in New York. She knows New York better than anybody, so she's going to join us. We also have Brian Mast on. We're going to talk about the Iranian nationals who are getting picked up in this country. Some pretty scary stuff about who crossed over the border in the last administration. Stephen Miron from the White House Council of Economic Advisors is going to join us as well. And we're going to talk about whether or not there will be a vacation for members of Congress, or as President Trump has said, you know, nobody goes home for a vacation until this bill is done. So we'll see. We'll talk to him about that.
So the big, beautiful bill has got some pushback already from even Speaker Johnson said yesterday, Senate is messing with it. It's a very delicate balance. Don't touch the salt tax. Don't touch the what I gave you for Medicaid. And they're doing both.
Yep. You know, I always think of passing these bills as sort of like a bunch of people sitting on a little raft in the ocean. And if one thing falls off, the whole thing tips over. And that's how hard it is to keep this on balance. They have to, I think, keep their focus on the larger tax cut package that was passed and extending it. That's the priority, I think, for these members. And there's a lot of good things in there for border control as well. So, you know, money, facilities. So we'll see where it goes. But yeah, the Senate loves to deliberate.
They do. The question is, does everyone want to stay on the raft?
Exactly. Thank you for using my metaphor, Brian.
I'm going to use it, and you could use it again in your show at 3 o'clock today at Eastern Time, The Story.
Thanks, Brian.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.